On Tech News Today, more details about Amazon's smartphone are revealed. And what the heck is Google planning for Google Glass developers next week? Plus, we'll tell you why satellite photos on Google Maps are about to get a whole lot better. And you won't believe the British government's new justification for surveilling UK citizens. All that and more coming up right now.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, June 17th, 2014. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free two-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Mike Elgin.
I'm Joe Panettiere.
Jason Howell is off this week. Anthony Nielsen is filling in for Jason. Tech News Today explores the big stories of the day with some of the world's best journalists. Now, Joe, we had some Skype issues, and so you're on audio only today. So
it's
a lovely picture of you, though.
This is the classic rewind edition of Tech News Today, audio only.
That's right. That's right. Well, you know, Skype does this sometimes. We've had all kinds of, we use Skype heavily on Twit generally, and this happens. It just sometimes you just can't get it to be responsive. So, but we're glad your voice is here and we're glad your brain is here. So that's all we really need today.
Excellent. Thank you. Yeah. should be a special episode with my brain sitting in without my my lovely personality on camera.
That's right. That's right. Well, let's jump right into the news. Amazon's rumored smartphone, which will probably be announced tomorrow, will be available on AT&T exclusively, according to a new report in the Wall Street Journal. It's a near certainty that Amazon will launch a smartphone tomorrow, but exactly what kind of smartphone will it be and why is Amazon launching it? Matt Hamblin is a senior editor at Computer World, and Steve Ranger writes for ZDNet and Tech Republic. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Now, Matt Hamblin, what can Amazon bring to the smartphone market that's not already there?
That's a great question. I think they're going to try to have a 3D camera capability that lets you look at their products online. That sounds like the most impressive innovation that they'd have. It's going to be their version of Android, like the Kindle on the tablet. So I don't know. Maybe it'll be a free phone. Maybe they'll have some kind of service arrangement with AT&T. Those will be some of the differences.
Yeah, this is Joe Panettiere. Any thoughts on pricing here and whether or not Amazon or AT&T will work out some sort of subsidizing strategy here?
Well, that's what a lot of people are guessing. I would say that when you think about some Android phones on the market for less than 100 unlocked, that certainly AT&T or somebody needs to step up. But if all they're doing with the Amazon smartphone is saying, this is a way to connect with our 250 million customers, then they're going to have to do something a little bit special. And there is the concept I've read that there will be cameras in the display that look at your face so that it'll be able to orient whatever you're looking at on the display to your location. So you could do a quick look at a product and turn it around without having to use touch commands like you would on your tablet or your desktop.
Interesting. Now, Steve Ranger, we've heard a lot about this 3D feature. Lots of companies have had 3D, a few, have had 3D screens like the HTC Evo 3D and the LG Optimus with 3D. Those failed, obviously, in the market. They did not get a good response from users. Why do you think that Amazon thinks that they can succeed with a 3D screen?
So it's a good question. Possibly one of the areas that Amazon might be looking at, assuming there is a smartphone, assuming it is 3D, is something to do with products. I mean, everything to do with Amazon's hardware, from the Kindle through to the Kindle Fire, has been about bringing you into that Amazon ecosystem, making it easier for you to listen to music or watch movies or buy products. So there's, you know, potentially there's something in there in 3D that might make it easier for you to buy a product, for example, to look at something in a kind of a 3D model rather than just in a flat 2D model on a screen. Something like that might be interesting. You're absolutely right. 3D has been around before. This is not entirely brand new technology. A lot of people looked at it and thought, yeah, it might be kind of a novelty, might be kind of intriguing at first. But if Amazon's actually found a way of using it to persuade you to buy more stuff or just to give you a new smartphone experience, and that could give them an interesting edge.
Hey, Steve, follow-up here from Joe Panettiere. Do you think there's going to be a way here for Amazon to optimize the phone for showrooming? And if so, any thoughts on what that may mean?
Well, that's definitely an interesting idea. I mean, if you look at the existing hardware they've got, one of the things that makes the Kindle Fire stand out, for example, is it's got a really great screen on it. Watching video on there is really great. So if they can use maybe the combination of 3D and a high-spec screen to come up with something that kind of solves that showrooming problem, then, yeah, that could be really intriguing.
Now, Matt Hamblin, this is really an interesting development that we've heard from the Wall Street Journal this morning, which is that they are going to be almost certainly on AT&T only for their initial launch. So we keep narrowing down the potential universe of potential users. So you start out with people who don't want an iPhone and who might want an Android phone, but not a regular Android phone. They want a forked version of Android that emphasizes the Amazon services rather than the Google services. And then it's U.S. only. And then within that, those narrowing parameters, you have AT&T only. And, you know, it's getting to the point where they don't sound super serious about really being a player in the smartphone world generally. It sounds to me more like, it kind of reminds me a little bit of the recently announced music service, which is just another perk for Prime members. Do you think there's any possibility that this will just be for Amazon Prime members?
Not just Prime, but at least that's my guess. I think they really cannot afford to not be in the smartphone space. So this is a reason to do it. AT&T has done well with exclusives in the past, and they try to be into everything. So it kind of makes sense it would be them. I think that the point you make is the bigger point, that this is, you know, where people want to be. One of the analysts I interviewed this week said he compared the mobile platform to what the browser was, you know, 10 years ago. So you just have to be there. And they don't want to miss out on that. It does sound like a small proportion, but of their total audience, but maybe this is the way they do it. They're 7 years late to the game.
Another curious fact is that the invitation, those who responded to the invitation in the affirmative for their event tomorrow, which by the way we'll be covering live tomorrow morning at 10:30, got a follow-up which showed a children's book. Is this going to be part of Amazon's sort of McDonald's approach to targeting children and turning children into customers? I mean, they have various features where you can have all-you-can-eat children's content of books and movies and so on. Is this, to some extent, going to be a phone for children, do you think, Steve Ranger?
It's not an angle I've thought about, to be honest. But I think if you look at any of the new handsets that are coming out, they tend to have some kind of whether it's called Kids Corner or just the kind of some sort of child locks bit with a fingerprint reader or something, that kind of audience is increasingly interesting to smartphone makers. I think Amazon aren't necessarily looking for a huge market share here. I think in tablets they haven't got a huge market share, but presumably they see the Kindle Fire as being quite a success. I think really they're looking to create a kind of a beachhead here, create an extra option that's not Android or not pure Android, that's not iOS. And I think smartphones probably gives them a better chance at that with something like 3D or maybe focusing on kind of more of that broader family audience. I think the smartphone market is still quite fragmented. I know it's a long-standing market, but that doesn't mean it's completely locked down. Android coming from kind of zero to a huge market share in just a few years shows that you can kind of come up with a kind of a disruptive product in this market if you've got something that's good enough. So I think there's actually quite a lot to play for in the smartphone market, whereas the tablet market might actually be a bit more locked down.
Interesting. Now, Matt Hamblin, I want to thank you for coming on Tech News today and talking to us about the Amazon phone.
Thank you.
You can find Matt Hamblin at computerworld.com and also on Twitter at Matt Hamblin. And Steve Ranger, I want to thank you as well.
Hey, always a pleasure.
Steve Ranger's at ZDNet.com and on Twitter at Steve Ranger. Well, in just a sec, we're going to talk about another upcoming series of announcements around Google Glass. But first, I want to tell you about Squarespace. Squarespace is the number one place to build a website. I've been using it myself for several years, and I absolutely love Squarespace. Sometimes I just go in and build websites just because it's so enjoyable to do, just to see how they're going to come out. They have 25 beautiful templates for you to start with. You go in there, pick a template, and then you can start customizing and optimizing your website just for your needs. You can build new pages, you can change the typeface, you can change the width of things, you can change the picture size, you can change everything you want to change. So the end result after you've modified the template is you end up with a still beautiful website, but one that's completely unique. If you have a small business, you can create a logo using their logo creator tool. You can check that out at blog.squarespace.com. But this logo tool is amazing because you don't need to be a designer. You don't have to have any artistic skill whatsoever. You can just go in there and build a really professional looking logo, which you can then trademark, which is great. And if you do sell things, if you do have a small business, you're selling things on your website, Squarespace has e-commerce for all subscription plan levels. Sounds expensive, but it's just $8 a month, and that includes free domain name if you sign up for a year. And Squarespace is mobile ready, and that means everything nowadays, because more and more people are using websites, surfing the web with mobile devices or tablets. Squarespace will simply recreate your website on the fly to be native on mobile devices. And that is fantastic. Plus, you can manage your site remotely while you're using a mobile device using the Squarespace Metric app for iPhone and iPad. So start a free 2-week trial with no credit card required and start building your website. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure you use the offer code TNT to get 10% off and show your support for Tech News Today. And we thank Squarespace for their support. And remember that a better web awaits, and it starts with your new Squarespace website. So, Joe Panettiere, what is going on with Google Glass next week?
Yeah, that is the big question, isn't it? And I think it's a Google Glass conversation, but it's a whole lot more. And what we're talking about is the annual Google I.O. conference, the company's massive developer conference. Now, that kicks off June 25th in San Francisco. And here to preview some potential trends out of the conference and news out of the conference is Todd R. Weiss and John Phillips. Now, Todd is a technology journalist who has written about Google Glass for eWeek and other publications. Todd, welcome to the program. Good to see you here.
Thanks a lot for having me.
No problem. And then we've also got John on board. He's the editor-in-chief of PC World. John, great to have you here.
Thank you.
So, gentlemen, Google I.O., the big conference next week, and also on top of that, or 2 weeks out, excuse me, on top of that, we've got a lot of Google Glass news this week in terms of partnerships that Google is announcing. I'm wondering what themes you expect to hear at the conference. Todd, I'll start with you. Are you focused mostly on the Google Glass news this week, or are you already looking out to Google I.O. to see what the bigger trends will be there?
Well, I've been focusing mostly this week on the news this week, the Google Glass at Work program. They announced their first partners for this project, where companies are going to be building apps with specific things in mind. And a couple of those we've already known about. APX Labs is a company that's already been doing some things with Google Glass, some interesting things I've written about for eWeek. But also, Google also has made some other Glass announcements, which are interesting, having to do with things like the ability now to, you know, get frames and all these other things. There's been a whole lot of things in terms of making Google Glass something people want even more.
Mm-hmm. And those early applications that Google's been talking about this week with the five ISV partners, are these proof of concepts or are these actual apps that you could deploy today or leverage today?
Well, I would say with a product that's still in beta, everything's still proof of concept, certainly. But these are apps that companies are going to be working on to try to find customers to use, I would imagine, still in the beta format. One of the companies, there's a bunch of companies. Wearable Intelligence, though, is building apps for businesses like manufacturing, mining, oil and gas, things like that, so that they've got workers out in the field. I actually interviewed some of them for a story a couple of weeks ago, maybe a month ago, where they're doing things like a guy is working on a project, say, in the wilderness. Oil and gas project, or a person on a pole who's working doing electrical rigging, line rigging, things like that. instead of being able to have to look at a manual, they can actually talk to Glass, get something that they need, or get a fact or a specific instruction on how to do something by talking to Glass and getting it through Glass. Those are the kinds of things that would be potentially possible once Glass is actually available in a retail setting.
Now, John Phillips, there's a big divergence between the popular culture around Glass, which has gone super negative, and what Google is doing, which is like super cheerleady about it. We saw the John Stewart report on Google Glass, which just mocked Google Glass users. There's a consensus that's formed that it's nothing but a spy device, even though it's a terrible spy device. Yet Google is really going whole hog. I got an invitation yesterday. Jason Howell and I are going to be attending Google Glass, the Google I/O, and I got an invitation around Google Glass. They're having two events. They're having some kind of lunch, and then they're having this cocktail reception around Google Glass, presumably inviting all the Google Glass explorers who are also attending the conference. We know that there's going to be a lot of conversation around Google Glass development. Of course, they pre-announced this Google Glass at Work program. Do you think that there's going to be a sort of acceptance at some point of Google Glass when Google comes out with some of these really practical applications that are for business and for companies and for, you know, all kinds of work-related as opposed to consumer-related applications?
Sure. So absolutely. Glass is being savaged by the press, and the John Stewart thing is really devastating to public perception of Glass because very few people actually see people wearing Glass in the public. I see people wearing Glass outside of Google headquarters, but I bet if you ask someone in Omaha or Rochester, New York, they've never seen anyone wear Glass. So we know about it through media images, and they're not positive. But if Google and other smart glass companies can get these devices in the workplace where there's a different threshold for acceptability, then yeah, sure, I think slowly, bit by bit, we're going to see more people wearing these devices, and the stigma attached to them will drop bit by bit. But right now, Google has a big battle of perception. And I actually think there's not going to be that much Glass news at I/O next week. And really, you could see Google shifting their wearable story to Android Wear, which from everything I've seen is it's a much more positive, useful user experience.
Yeah, John, building on that, you know, I think the Google I/O conference, we're going to see so much news on so many different fronts. You know, there's all this talk about Android in cars. There are set-top boxes, sessions on set-top boxes, sessions on wearables. We've seen all the Google satellite news in recent weeks. And one thing I would worry about, either as a Google Enterprise customer or an investor, is focus. It seems like Google is placing a lot of huge bets in a lot of vastly different markets. Do you see that similarly, or do you see an overall strategy coming together for Google?
I see that very similarly. So yeah, they're throwing mud at every wall, and it's not a four-cornered room. It's a 12-cornered room, and mud is going on every single wall. But they have no they have an incredible appetite for risk. They've proven that they're quite happy to release products and then not see them through. So I remember, 2012, the Nexus Q came out, and I spent about 6 weeks following the developers of Nexus Q. This was the media streamer, looked like a port.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So I spent about 6 weeks embedded at Google following the story. And I knew as I was, you know, taking notes that this would not be a consumer success. They announced it at I/O, and within 2 months, they had shut down the program. Android at Home was another program that they haven't followed through with, and now they have the Nest acquisition, and who knows what's going to happen with that. So, yeah, I can't really take this from what this means from an investment community perspective, but, I mean, on one side, I give Google props for trying so many inventive things, but on the other side, we have to wonder, is Glass just an experiment for them, albeit a very, very expensive public-facing experiment?
Interesting. I want to thank both of you for coming on Tech News today. And so thank you so much, Todd Weiss.
Thanks for having us.
All right, you can find Todd Weiss at eWeek.com and also on Twitter at TechManTalking. Interesting Twitter handle. And thank you, John Phillips, as well.
Thank you, Mike.
John Phillips is at PC World and on Twitter at John Phillips. Well, online satellite images are about to get a lot better. The U.S. government has lifted restrictions on how high-def satellites' pictures can be, according to a report on the BBC. The U.S. Commerce Department has not yet announced the rule change. The BBC's report is based on a claim by a satellite imaging company called Digital Globe, which asked for the policy change and says their request was granted. Joe, this is going to be really interesting because essentially there's been a restriction on satellite images for any object smaller than 20 inches. It would have to be digitized or, you know, blurred out. And now it can go all the way down. And Digital Globe says they're going to be able to show objects as small as 11 inches wide on maps. You're going to be able to zoom in and you're going to be able to see mailboxes. They specified mailboxes and manhole covers and things like that, which they say are important for the post office, for city government, that sort of thing. They're really cheerleading this thing. But I suspect that this is going to be a problem for lots of people worldwide, for privacy advocates, for authoritarian governments who don't want their enemies to have, you know, military-grade satellite images. But it is an interesting development, and it's also interesting, I think, that the government didn't announce it. This company, Digital Globe, announced it.
Yeah, you know, it's rather amazing as we watch the continued advancements of these satellite technologies, and then Google making investments in satellite with the Skybox buy for about $500 million. It seems like we're off to the races here, and the technology is just going to continue to advance at such a rate that I think the big fear is very often when new technologies come along, the bad guys figure out how to use it first, and then the good guys catch up and try to figure out how to secure it and lock it down and make it less threatening to all of us. So I think there are some legitimate concerns here. But on the other hand, you know, once you open up the barn door and let the horse out, there's no putting it back. And high res is just going to get better and better and better. And privacy, I think privacy on the web and in this image area is a myth at this point.
Yeah, absolutely true. Well, Joe, companies that have the word box in them are making a lot of acquisitions this week. What's going on?
Yeah, you know, we saw two more acquisitions just in the last 24 hours, give or take. You've got Box this week acquiring Stream, which allows customers to stream files to their desktops. And then you've got rival Dropbox today acquiring Parastructure. Now, this is a company I hadn't heard of previously, but Parastructure apparently builds data analysis software. So it's been interesting. Over the last 2 to 3 years, I've been covering the file sync and sharing market, both the giants such as a Box and a Dropbox. And then you've got new competitors everywhere, such as a LogMe and Cubby, and Apple and Microsoft and Google are also in the market. And then even upstarts, like there's a small company called eFolder that's promoting a product called Anchor out to the IT channel. So you've got a lot going on right now in file sync and sharing. But Mike, I wonder, where are the profits in all this? What are your thoughts so far?
Well, you know, these we've talked about this theme recently. There's so many acquisitions these days, and none of the pricing makes sense. Very little of it makes sense. There's such high valuations for these acquisitions. But I think that to a very large extent, and I think that's the case in both of these cases, where these companies are going for the big play. They want it all. They want to be the leaders in a space that's growing rapidly. And in order to do that, they need to knock competitors out of the market. They need to acqui-hire. They need to do all these things so that they can position themselves to have what is in the future going to be a massively larger market than it is today. So it can only be explained as big plays for the future. There must be competition for these acquisitions, and or the companies being acquired know that they can sell eventually at very high cost. And so the prices for these acquisitions are just going through the roof. But in both of these cases, it's clear that these companies really want to own their respective markets. And of course, you know, cloud computing is just huge. And everybody, you know, acquisitions are what companies are doing right now. It's just the way that you consolidate. And when the smoke clears, there are going to be a tiny number of companies in each of these categories. And each of them wants to be the company that survives.
Well, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mike.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, Dropbox and Box both have really strong brands out in the market. And it's been interesting to watch their valuations, to your point. You know, Forbes estimated that Dropbox's valuation was about $10 billion this was as of around January, with 2013 revenues about $200 million. So again, $200 million in revenue, but a $10 billion valuation, that's through the roof. And then Box, on the other hand, their 12-month revenue back in January was about $124 million, which more than doubled from the previous year. But get this one, Mike, even though Box's revenue was about $124 million for a 12-month period, they actually lost nearly $170 million for the year, which I just wonder when these companies are going to push into profitability and what the path is. But to your point, I think there is a land grab here, and let's buy up as many key players to round out a portfolio rather than being a one-off file sync and sharing service.
Yeah, definitely. Well, speaking of acquisitions, the speech recognition company Nuance Communication is exploring a sale. The company could be acquired by Samsung, according to a piece in the Wall Street Journal. And Joe Panettiere, this is really astonishing because, of course, Apple uses this technology in Siri. Daimler uses it. Nintendo uses it. Panasonic uses it. And, of course, Samsung uses Nuance as well. This is really, I think, the leading voice software. And now it looks like they're shopping themselves around for an acquisition by a big company.
Well, I think you just hit the nail right on the head. I think Nuance may be shopping themselves around. And this is pure speculation on my part. But you would imagine that in order to drive up their own valuation in the bids, they would leak the story that maybe one company is interested in them to get the other suitors at the table and drive up the price. Because you can imagine Apple having a lot of concern if Samsung gets its hands on this technology and controls this technology going forward.
Absolutely. And Carl Icahn's group is the largest shareholder. They have a 19% stake in Nuance. Joe, Microsoft is planning to change the way that developers interact with future versions of its browser. What's happening there?
You know, it's interesting. I'm almost having flashbacks to Steve Ballmer chanting, "Developers, developers, developers." Microsoft is once again opening its arms to developers, and this time it's around Internet Explorer and the so-called Developer Channel Initiative. The whole idea here is to give web developers a chance to use new Internet Explorer releases and new features before the general release. Now, Mike, on the one hand, I think this is a smart move by Microsoft, but on the other hand, I say, what took you so long? This sounds really familiar to what Google and others have been doing for years with their browsers.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're going to hear more about this this week on various shows, including Windows Weekly. So tune in for that, and we'll go into much more detail than we are doing here today. While the British government says spying on UK citizens via Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and even Google Search is acceptable and legal because those services are based in the United States, and therefore it's international and not domestic surveillance. Boy, what a justification this is, Joe Panettiere. I just, you know, it's pretty crazy to say that, you know, you can spy on citizens. It's not where the citizen is. It's not who the citizen is. It's where the server is.
Right. And the irony of it is, back here in the States, you've got Microsoft going to court to try and protect information on servers globally and keep the U.S. from getting access to those servers that are offshore. So it's rather amazing right now how every government is laying claim to, yes, we need access to the systems, and then every major IT provider is battling both on the home front and internationally to protect their data from prying eyes.
Yeah, and this position was described in a draft summary of a report that's going to be released today by Privacy International and other advocacy groups. And in a delicious irony, this justification emerged as part of the British government's defense in response to a lawsuit by privacy advocates around government surveillance uncovered by Edward Snowden. So this Snowden sort of beat the bushes, and this is one of the things that came scurrying out as this justification for why it's okay for a government to spy on its own citizens. Very strange justification, but also kind of hilarious if you think about it. Well, we told you on April 4th that Google's Nest Protect smoke detector was recalled because of a faulty in-the-air gesture feature. The product's been unavailable since that recall, but now it's back, and they dropped the price from $130 to $99. The Nest Protect let users turn off alarms by waving their hands in front of the device, but the recall was in effect because the alarm could be accidentally turned off in a real fire. As people went running around the house screaming there's a fire and waving their arms, the waving of arms turned off the alarm, and that was considered unsafe. The new version doesn't have the motion detection feature at all. And let's face it, that was really one of the main features. The annoying fact of smoke detectors is that maybe the battery gets low or it goes off because you burn the toast, and then you can't reach it to turn it off the annoying alarm because it's too high or you need to go get the ladder or whatever. And this Nest Protect enables you to just wave your hand to turn off the alarm. Well, that feature is gone, but the price is lower, and I think that's a reasonable compromise. Well, that's the tech news today. Joe Panettiere, thanks a lot for hanging in there. These Skype problems pop up from time to time, but really we just the most important thing is that you're here with us every single Tuesday and that we can hear your voice.
Well, thank you very much for having me aboard, Mike. I've enjoyed it as usual, and I look forward to jumping back into the conversation next Tuesday.
All right. We'll see you next Tuesday, Joe. And by the way, are you going to Google I.O. next week? I know you've gone in past years.
You know, I'm not going to Google I.O., but I am very curious because I.O. in previous years, as you'll recall, attendees got Chromebooks and for free from Google. And I wonder what the handout is this year. I'm almost wondering Google Nest could be the handout.
Yeah, here you go. We got some faulty smoke detectors.
Products.
Good luck.
I know you want a smartwatch, Mike, but it could be all those recalled Nest products rolled out at I.O.
Yeah, that's right. Well, we'll see. Thanks again, Joe Panettiere.
Take care.
All right. Well, you can subscribe to Tech News Today at twit.tv/TNT and follow us on Twitter at Tech News Today TV. Join our Google Plus community and also circle our page for searching for Tech News Today on Google Plus. And of course, we want to hear from you. So comment on Twitter or Google Plus using the hashtag Tech News Today. Send us an email at tnt@twit.tv or leave us voicemail by calling 260-TNT-SHOW. Don't miss our evening newscast, Tech News Tonight at 4 p.m. Pacific. My name is Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow.